And welcome back to another episode of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside Jonah Tolles. Of course, we are back and better than ever. It is the beginning of the week, but it's just not any other week because we have the national championship game tonight between Clemson and LSU. We also have the East-West Shrine Bowl going on this week in the week of practices down there in St. Petersburg, Florida. And then the game this weekend, but I have to ask you, Jonah, how is everything going with you on this glorious Monday morning?
It's going great. And I got to tell you, it's bittersweet because when one thing ends, the national championship, another thing begins, and that's the NFL draft. I really do believe the NFL draft starts with a pre-draft all-star game circuit, and the first one is the East-West Shrine Bowl. They changed it from the East-West Shrine game to the Shrine Bowl in terms of the naming, so when you see that game, make sure you call it the Shrine Bowl. And then you got the Senior Bowl the following week. So it's going to be a great next couple of weeks. We're going to be in Mobile live for the Senior Bowl. And we have a couple of TDN staff going to St. Petersburg for the Shrine Bowl. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens the next few weeks with a couple of these prospects. So this is really signals the start of draft season.
Lots of things going on this week. And it's not just the East-West Shrine Bowl. We have the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl going on out there in Los Angeles, California as well. Something I want to get to. Probably in the next few years, I want to make sure that I get out there to get that full-on experience.
Absolutely.
And I want to get down to St. Petersburg one year as well. So that's definitely a checkbox that I'm definitely wanting to get.
There have been some good players come
to
out the NFLPA Bowl.
Absolutely.
Recently.
Absolutely. And there's talent everywhere, man. That's the good thing about these all-star games, I should say. So you have good players coming out. But, of course, just to give you a rundown of today's show, once again, thank you guys for listening. Just to give you a rundown of what we are going to discuss today. Of course, we have to go through some of our favorite players from the East-West Shrine Bowl, and also we're going to give you a preview of the national championship game in the second segment of the show. So without further ado, let's go through some of our favorite players that are playing in the East-West Shrine Bowl, and I'll start with you. Who are three players that you're looking forward to watching in this game?
I got to tell you, I love this question because I got three guys I want you guys to keep an eye on. They're all relatively small school defenders. The first one is Charlotte defensive end Alex Highsmith. I believe he was second in the league in sacks with 14 and a half behind, guess who, Chase Young. This is a guy that is crazy explosive and converts speed to power as well as any small school edge rusher in this 2020 class. I think he's the best pure defensive prospect at the Shrine Bowl. And if there's one player that's going to be called up to the Senior Bowl if an injury happens, I think Alex Highsmith is number one on that list. So keep an eye on him in terms of a call-up to the Senior Bowl. I think he's going to blow up the one-on-one pass rush drills in St. Petersburg. The second guy I want to mention is Neville Clark, the cornerback from UCF. Not so much a small school guy, but he didn't get a lot of national notoriety despite having two great seasons at UCF. This guy, you know, last two seasons, 28 pass deflections and 4 interceptions. This guy gets his hands on the ball more than any other player at the Shrine Bowl in terms of the cornerback position. Love his ball skills. Love his length at 6'1", 187. Very good player. I think he's a sneaky late-round guy to keep an eye on, especially if he has a good week at the Shrine Bowl in St. Petersburg. The last guy I want to mention is someone that not a lot of people know about, but Jim Nagy talked about him quite a bit in the lead-up to this year. He didn't have a great year at Illinois State, but safety Luther Kirk is a guy that's really rangy and has great ball skills. He had 5 interceptions as a junior last year. He followed up with no interceptions this year, but he looked a lot more assertive and aggressive as a run defender as a senior. And I think he has as much talent as any safety at the Shrine Bowl this year. And I'd be really interested to see how he looks working the deep middle at the Shrine Bowl and if he potentially gets a Senior Bowl call-up if someone gets hurt in Mobile.
So I'm really glad that you mentioned Kirk just because I do FCS Friday every week for a TDN, and he was one name that constantly kept popping up. And Illinois State actually has two guys playing in this game that are of high interest to me. The other is James Robinson, the running back, and he set all types of records when he was at Illinois State.
Yep.
He leads the FCS in rushing every single year.
Yep.
He has over like 1,800 rushing yards every single year. It's just ridiculous, the number that he does put up. But he's one name that I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on, and I'm really glad that you mentioned Kirk just because I love his length. I love the free safety aspect that he's able to play back there. He's very rangy. I like this film a lot. especially considering at the FCS level, that's something you always want to see from these guys. You want them to pop, especially with them being from a smaller school. You want them to be able to stand out a little bit more than their counterparts, and having them show some athleticism that you just don't see with their surroundings. So Kirk definitely is a name that I'll be keeping an eye on along with you. Some other guys, I'm going to show the offensive line some love here. Calvin Throckmorton from Oregon. I thought he was a guy that maybe could have got a Senior Bowl invitation. I'll say I was mildly surprised that he didn't get one. But there's some bend that he does struggle with. But as far as consistency, I mean, he has been the model of that. He's played every position outside of left guard during his time at Oregon. He has 52 career starts. So that just shows you the durability that he does show. Hasn't given up a sack since his junior season. So I think he's a guy that really does have to reduce down the inside just because of he's not as fleet of foot as you would like these NFL offensive tackles to be. And I think that's something that's going to be tested with him. And what I'm going to be watching is does he play predominantly at guard or do they stick him at tackle? But I think his future is going to be more at guard just because he isn't the most athletic guy in the world. But if he can get in one of those, I think he is scheme versatile, but I think he can play. I think he's probably best suited in that man or power blocking scheme just so he can get moving vertically as opposed to moving laterally. I think some of his flaws are really exposed when he's asked to show off his athleticism. So really looking forward to Throckmorton. Another guy that I thought was going to get a Senior Bowl invite but didn't was Darrell Williams from Mississippi State. Now, he's kind of like Elton Jenkins light. He's not as athletically gifted as what Elton Jenkins was, but and he's not a guy that's really going to have these bone crushing blocks or anything of that nature. But you look on, you turn on the film with him, and he, I don't want to say he just gets in the way, but he just does exactly what he's asked to do. So that's what I like about Darrell Williams. He's probably not going to be an upper echelon starter or anything like that. But as far as that can, but as far as a guy that can be a lower tier starter or that sixth man off the bench that can play any position, any interior position up front, I think he definitely can do that. So Darrell Williams is definitely one guy that I'm going to have a close eye on. And my last guy, sticking with the trenches here, but going on the opposite side of the ball, and that's Raekwon Williams, the defensive tackle from Mississippi State. Another guy that I thought possibly could have got a Senior Bowl invite, but he just didn't progress during his last two seasons at Michigan State. Had a monster sophomore season, and he showed up a lot as a junior as well, but he just didn't pop as much as you would like on film. But I really like what he brings, and I think he's very stout on the interior, very strong hands. Love how he holds at the point of attack as well. So Darrell Williams, Calvin Throckmorton, and Raekwon Williams would be the three guys that I keep a close eye on.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned Williams and Throckmorton, because when you're a late-round guy, you need versatility on your resume. I mean, these late-round guys are not going to be starters immediately when they come to the NFL. So to make a roster, you have to be that swing six-man guy, like you mentioned. And Throckmorton, you know, who played, you know, tackle, guard, center, all these positions. Same thing with Darrell Williams, who could also play center or guard. That inside, you know, position flexibility is so key to making a roster. So even if you're not a starter, being that valuable depth piece is so valuable for a team if you want to make that depth chart. But I can't go without doing a Senior Bowl, a Shrine Bowl preview, per se, without talking about Tyler Johnson. Tyler Johnson, I think, is the best pure player.
Of course, at the Shrine Bowl.
I think we were both taken aback when he wasn't invited to the Senior Bowl. But I think we understand why. I think there are some, you know, physical traits that doesn't, you know, they're not as appealing as other wide receivers in this class. But you look at his tape, man. I don't know how you can watch his tape and not think he's a top 10, 12 wide receiver in this class, let alone seniors. This guy's just a gifted route runner. He's so natural with his release package. In the air, man, he can make, you know, just contested catches. You know, he may drop the easy ones, but this guy can – I don't really see his hands as much of a problem as other people do. I think he's a natural hands catcher who will go up and get it and when asked to. I think he's reliable in that department. Speed may not be his calling card, but he just knows how to get separation. You know what I mean? He just knows how to stack receivers vertically. He knows how to get open vertically without having true speed. And that's, to me, the mark of a really refined wide receiver. And you don't really see that at the college level too often. Because in college, a lot of players went off their athleticism, whereas Johnson wins a lot in his technique. And to me, that's what's the mark of a really refined receiver and player that's ready for the next level.
I like Johnson a lot, man. And like you said, I think I was taking it far that he wasn't selected for the Senior Bowl. So we'll see how he does. Now, an event like this, you're expecting him to dominate the competition, just because I think he probably would have dominated at the Senior Bowl as well,
oh, yeah.
considering his skill set. And I know he does struggle to separate from time to time, and there are instances where he has some drops. That's really where that's the biggest Achilles heel in his game right now. But as far as a guy that translates to the NFL, I think he translates very well, even though he isn't the most fleetest of foot or a guy that isn't going to win a lot of foot races, I should say. But he just knows how to get open. And that's what I love about Tyler Johnson the most. So really going to be keeping an eye on him. But I was looking down the roster and I did not see him on the roster. So we'll see what does happen with that situation. I don't know if he pulled out.
Maybe a late mobile call-up?
Yeah, maybe, or something of that nature. I think that definitely could help him a lot. So we'll see what does happen with that situation. I'm looking through the roster right now, and he's definitely not on either team listed. So we'll see what does happen with that, just because the Shrine Bowl didn't make any announcement about that. And I haven't seen anything else on his front as far as pulling out of the game or anything like that.
Right.
So we'll see what does happen with that situation. Maybe Jim Nagy is just pulling our leg a little bit and waiting to announce it the week of, just because I'm sure he's been getting a lot of backlash about that. So we'll see what does happen with that situation. But before we move on, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, and we are back, and let's talk about the national championship game. No, Minnesota is not playing in it like Jonah did predict about a month ago.
You keep giving me grief about that.
Of course, I'm never going to let you forget about that, ever. I'm never going to let you forget about that. So,
the Golden Ghosts.
We're debating Clemson, LSU. There's going to be prospects all over the field. Future NFL stars, future NFL first-round picks, not just the 2020 class, but 2021, 2022, and 2023, man. There's going to be stars all over the field. And this game is what we like to call a scout's dream. But starting at the quarterback, of course, I would be remiss if I did not start there. I think this might be the game of the year, the best game ever between two of the best quarterback prospects that we have ever seen, as far as on a college football landscape, between Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. And I know we had a really good matchup between two really good young quarterbacks in Lawrence and Fields last week, but it wasn't the stage that this one is on. LSU's offense is flaming hot. Trevor Lawrence comes in off a flaming hot second half against Ohio State. So both of these teams really have momentum coming into this game. But I'm going to be keeping an eye on the quarterback matchup, of course. But we know the wide receiver DB matchup on both sides is going to be so much fun to watch. But on the offensive side, that's something that I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on in this game. So going to flip it to you. What's something that you're looking forward to the most in this game?
I think it's all about the offense, my friend. I think it's whoever has the ball last. I really do. I think both defenses are good, but I don't think either are elite enough to where that's what's going to be the difference in this game. The difference in this game is simply going to come down to Joe Burrow versus Trevor Lawrence. You talked about it. We're looking probably, I think, most likely the two next number one overall picks in the NFL draft. I think, you know, this year with Burrow and the next year with Trevor Lawrence.
Definitely.
These are two of the best quarterbacks we've seen in the last decade, I think, in terms of being quarterback prospects. And you could be looking at the, you know, next two Heismans as well if Trevor Lawrence has a good year next year. So it's going to come down to those two, bottom line. But I think let's look at their wide receivers, right? Clemson, Justin Ross, T. Higgins, Amari Rodgers, ton of playmakers. LSU, you have Ja'Marr Chase, the Blitnikoff, and then you have Justin Jefferson, who just had like 80 touchdowns against Oklahoma. And you got Thaddeus Moss and those boys. So it's going to be a very tight matchup. And it's just so evenly matched, right? I mean, both defenses are good, not great. Offensive line trench play, good, not great. But then you got the playmakers, man, just so even. You know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire for LSU, Travis Etienne for Clemson, you know, the quarterbacks, the receivers. I just cannot wait. And I really think it's going to come down to who has the ball last. I mean, it would not surprise me at all both teams score 40-plus.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think this is going to be a very high-scoring game. So if you're betting on this game, slam the over. Definitely slam the over on this game, just because I think it's going to be very high scoring. And even though both teams have very impressive secondaries, their defenses haven't played well for the most part this year. And Clemson has played much better than what LSU has. I will give them that
credit. Yes, I agree with that.
But they've played good in spurts, and they really haven't put together the totality of an entire game. So really interested in this game. Justin Jefferson, man, he was lights out against Oklahoma. I mean, there's not much you can say about his performance, but besides it being spectacular, I mean, there was no way they were stopping him. Four touchdowns in the first half, I believe it was. He was just completely unstoppable in this game. But Clavon Chaisson, I know you're a big fan of him. I believe you put some clips up of him. So what's something that you're looking from him in this game?
Man, I just want to see consistency. Because I think that's the biggest thing with his game as a pass rusher is that he has as much talent as, you know, as much talent as any pass rusher in this draft outside of Chase Young. Look at just his speed, his length. I think he's a lot more powerful than people give him credit for, too. And he has a lot of pass rush moves he works on. This guy has great hands, uses his length really well. I showed a clip of yesterday how he used a spin move against Texas to get to the quarterback. This guy really has a complete package. And I talked about, he reminds me a lot of Anthony Barr coming out of UCLA and showing the same kind of stuff where Anthony Barr kind of moved back and forth between pass rusher and linebacker. He's more of an off-ball guy now at the NFL level. But coming out of UCLA, he was a true kind of edge rusher, you know, and sometimes a drop back in coverage. Really the same sort of thing with Chaisson right now at LSU. And I think his tape is just as good. It would surprise me if he fell out of the top 20 picks just because of his pure talent alone, what he's going to do at the combine, and what he's done the last 2 years. This guy is a guy – I think if his medical's clear, check out, because this guy has had a medical history. If his medical's clear, this guy's going to be a bona fide first-round pick. He has the talent. He has the gifts. He just needs to put it all together. I think in a big game like this against Clemson, if he puts it together in this game, has a sack or two in this one, man, his stock is really going to skyrocket, because that's going to be the last thing scouts see on his tape. And this guy has the gifts to do it. He could really turn this game on its head if he generates a lot of pass rush against Trevor Lawrence. I cannot wait to see what he does in this game.
His explosiveness combined with his bend is special, man. It is really, really special. And I think he's probably suited best as a 3-4 outside linebacker, but I think he probably can play some 5 technique in a 4 down as well. And I think he's very, very unique as far as the skill set that he brings to the table and just everything that he brings. And I think that's something that's misconstrued about him, is that he's strictly a pass rusher. And I think that's so wrong about him. And people really show their hand if they think he's just simply a pass rusher. And like I said a couple shows ago, if you go back and watch him against Alabama, he showed how well a run defender he is. And also Florida was a great game for him to watch as well. Just heavy hands at the point of attack. He knows how to squeeze and reduce when teams leave him unblocked, when they're running zone reads against him. He plays the quarterback really well in the zone read, but he also chases down the line of scrimmage to chase those running backs down as well. And he's really good at seeing pullers and really diagnosing things as well, wrong shouldering things, collapsing gaps. I like him a lot, man. I think he has a chance to be really special.
Yes, I love that you mentioned that last part, because so many people are going to label him as a speed rusher only, a guy that's a one-trick pony. That could be farther from the truth. I implore you to watch Mississippi State. I implore you to watch Florida. All these other LSU games. This guy is one of the best run defenders on that entire team. And this guy has a great motor. This guy uses his length extremely well. Talk about the heavy hands. This guy just holds up so well at the point of attack. And he's really disciplined in his contain. This guy doesn't, rush up field. This guy is not, lazy. This guy is a very good run defender. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I don't want him to be wrongly labeled during the draft. It's a big reason why I think he's going to be a top 20 player on my draft board when we get to April. But, I want to mention another X-factor guy in this game. I'm pretty sure you'll agree on this. We talk about Justin Jefferson. We talk about Ja'Marr Chase, all these stud LSU playmakers. It's going to come down to how big of a game is A.J. Terrell going to have.
Yeah.
Because Justin Jefferson cannot go for 900 yards against Clemson and Clemson going to win. I mean, someone's got to stop these wide receivers. Whether it's Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, whatever it may be, A.J. Terrell has to put up some resistance and make sure they don't go bananas. Because as long as the LSU receivers, you can't stop them. You can only hope to contain them. As long as both guys don't go nuts, I think Clemson has a good shot in this game. If they can halt Joe Burrow passing him just a little bit, get a couple stops, that's fine. They're not going to hold him to below, 20 points, something ridiculous like that. They just have to contain him. It's going to start with a player like A.J. Terrell, who's taking on an increased role this year. He's been up and down, but if there's ever a game where he can show scouts his true talent, I think he's one of the most talented cornerbacks in this draft class, if he declares, it's this game against two of the best receivers in the nation, two future first-round, second-round picks. man, this is the game for him to shine. And I think this would be a great game for him. Remember, national championship last year, arguably his best game ever. Against Alabama, yeah. had the pick six and played just a tremendous game across the board, run support, everything. If he can do that again in another big game, that's going to mean so much for his draft stock, because that'll be not only be the last thing scouts think of when they see his name, but also he show up in the biggest games of his career against the best competition. So that'll be a big thing for him. There may not be a prospect in this game that can gain more than AJ Terrell.
I agree, and I think there's three people that have to have the game of their lives on Clemson's defense in order for them to at least slow down this LSU attack. One of them is Isaiah Simmons, of course.
I agree.
I think Brent Venables, he just has to unleash him every way possible, whether that's as a blitzer, a strong safety, a free safety. He just has to consistently free up or mix up the looks against Joe Burrow to try to confuse him, and that starts with Isaiah Simmons just using him all over the field. And don't be surprised, Justin Jefferson plays primarily in the slot. Don't be surprised if they match up Isaiah Simmons with him quite a bit,
yes.
just to yep. use his length to bother him a bit, just because LSU likes to use him a lot on a lot of option routes. So what they do, just watching their film a little bit, they'll have everybody run all go just to clear it out for Justin Jefferson underneath for him to work. And that's exactly what he did against Texas. He made a living off of that against Texas early on in the year. And I think him isolated against Isaiah Simmons, now it would be really risky just because Justin Jefferson is so shifty, but I think Isaiah Simmons, I think he can slow him down a little bit with his length. That's not to say he'll completely shut him down, but I think he can slow him down just a little bit to give other guys chances on that defense. And another one is AJ Terrell, of course. You already covered him. And another one is Kevon Wallace, the safety that they like to use all over the field as well. I think he has to have a really good game. Now, he didn't play that great against Ohio State, but I thought he made some timely stops in that game as well to help that defense really turn things around in the second half. So keep an eye on those three guys. I definitely think they have to have the game of their lives. But just touching on Simmons, did you have anything else to add to that?
I completely agree with you. You look at his snaps just from the season. I think he played more snaps as a slot defender than any other position this year. Is either that or, you know, one of the outside linebacker spots. He played everywhere. He played from
yeah,
safety.
Played everywhere.
To even outside corner. He played outside corner yeah. for a couple snaps. This guy's an absolute freak. And I told you this early on in the year. It would not surprise me at all if he's a top 10, top 5 pick in this draft just because of today's NFL and what the defenses want to do. Defensive coordinators are moving almost to like the NBA, right? Positionless ball, where defense, you know, such base nickel today. Your linebackers have to move like safeties. Your safeties have to move like corners. It's positionless football almost for your base nickel defenses. And Isaiah Simmons is like the poster boy of that kind of defense. And I cannot wait to see, you know, how teams value him on the board, because when he runs 4.38 at the combine, when he jumps 40 inches in the vertical, his stock is just going to be through the roof. Every NFL Network show, every draft show is going to be about how Isaiah Simmons is an absolute freak. And I think teams are going to have him in the top 5 to 7 players on their board based on his athletic traits, his versatility, and his overall production and pedigree at Clemson.
It's definitely a freak show. I can't wait to watch him, not only at the combine, but especially in this game. So I want to transition to the running backs in this game. And this is the last topic I want to touch today, just because I think both of them really have to have big games in order to win this game. And if you notice, when Clemson made their big comeback or their turnaround in the second half against Ohio State, they started to incorporate Travis Etienne a bit more, just because I know how special Trevor Lawrence is, and I know how good those receivers are on the perimeter, but it all starts with Travis Etienne. Once they're able to get him going, and it's not just as a runner, they started to throw the ball to him on screens out of the backfield and some of those flare tosses to the side, those side-to-side passes, and just letting his speed and playmaking instincts take over. That's really when the magic started working for them. So Travis Etienne, just his overall outlook, and how do you view him as not only a college player but also an NFL prospect?
I love that you mentioned this running back matchup or duel of sorts, because this is a matchup, I think, of the two of the best pass-catching running backs expected to be in this 2020 class. To a Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a monster in the passing game, whether it's a pass protector or as a pass catcher. Etienne, I think, still needs a little work as a pass protector. But as a pass catcher, you saw against Ohio State, he just blew the game open whenever they incorporated him more in the passing game. And this guy, I think, had 2 receiving touchdowns in that game. This is a guy that, you know, obviously has speed, the agility. And when you get him in the open field and space, that's when he's most dangerous. And then when you project him to the NFL, I think that's where he has the most upside. Of course, running backs today are being more incorporated in the passing game more now than ever. And when you can get players in space like that on screens, stops, you know, put them in the slot, wherever it may be, that's where you get him more in space and get him more open field to maneuver with. That's where ETN can be most dangerous at the NFL level. So if he could put on another receiving performance like he did against Ohio State, against LSU, it will mean so much for his draft stock. If he has a big game against LSU in the passing game, there's a chance he might be the number one running back on most teams' boards just because that explosiveness and that potential in the passing game. Whereas other players like Jonathan Taylor and, you know, J.K. Dobbins, they don't have the same kind of explosion in the open field as ETN does. And ETN's value in the passing game could be a little higher, a bit of a ceiling. So that's what I'm watching, is how do these running backs fare in the passing game? Because I think both are going to get theirs as a runners. But what they do in the passing game, I think, is going to unlock the offense that each of them play on. So that's what I'm going to be watching the most in this running back battle. Both are going to get their own in rushing yards, but how do both of them fare and how they incorporate in the passing game may be the difference in this game.
Definitely agree with that. And I want to transition to the other side. Now, let's talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I know he was battling a hamstring injury against Oklahoma, but he toughed it out. He still played, and he had an impact in the game. But we love what he has shown this year. There's been comparisons that have been all over the place with him. Maurice Jones-Drew, Doug Martin have been two of the most common. And I definitely see both of those in his game. A guy that stays low to the ground, excellent contact balance, a great receiver out of the backfield as well. Another player who has had a breakout year after overtaking that number one running back role. So he's had a really good year. A guy that projects most likely to be a late day two to early day three selection. I think that's a fair range for him, right in that third, fourth, fifth round area. I think that's a fair evaluation of him. But just your overall thoughts on Clyde Edwards-Helaire and how can he have an effect in this game?
Jack of all trades, master of none. We talked about it for months now. Doug Martin. It's a Spider-Man meme of them pointing at each other. Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Doug Martin, my friend, both built low to the ground, great contact balance. And here's the thing about him. He's just reliable in every part of the game you ask him to play. Whether it's the pass catcher, pass protector, early down guy, outside zone, inside zone. This guy is scheme versatile. He can play on all three downs. And this is just a guy that I think coaches are going to love because he may not have that flashy athleticism like Travis Etienne. He may not have that breakaway speed or that power of a guy like Jonathan Taylor. But what he does is that he does everything well in terms of ball security and everything where it comes with his versatility. And I think that's what coaches are going to want in a prospect. And I think teams are going to value that kind of reliability on every down with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And like I mentioned, Etienne, I think the biggest aspect and biggest impact he had in this game is as a receiver. So I think everyone's going to be focused on his wide receivers in this game. T. Higgins, Justin Jefferson, Justin Ross, Jamar Chase. But that's why I think Etienne and Edwards-Helaire can have a big impact because I think the middle of the field is going to be wide open. You mentioned Isaiah Simmons' potential on Justin Jefferson. Who's going to be guarding Clyde Edwards-Helaire on those little pop-out passes? I really think he can have a 6-7-8 catch game and really catch Clemson off guard, kind of like we did to Alabama. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he works in the passing game. So I think that's where his value is going to come the most at the NFL level.
Definitely with you on that. And I'm really interested to see how he does in this game, especially if he's still battling the hamstring injury. And we'll be able to tell pretty early in this game. But he didn't show to have too many signs of it against Oklahoma. So I think he could have a big effect in this game just because Clemson's linebackers outside of Isaiah Simmons aren't really that great. And I like to roll down the safety number 19, Tanner Muse, into the box at times to guard running backs. But he's not an overly athletic or rangy guy at all. So I think isolating Edwards-Helaire on some of these linebackers and second-level defenders, I think they could take advantage of that a lot. So I have to get your prediction for this game, but I will go first. Of course, I picked Clemson to win it all prior to their game against Ohio State, and I'm sticking with it, man. I think Clemson, they have the heart of a champion. Experience matters in games like this, and I think they're going to win this game, but I think it's going to be a shootout, like you said. And I'm going to go Clemson 40, LSU 37. That's my
final. Wow, I'm honestly surprised, but you know what? It makes sense. We've talked about it all year. What matters is postseason experience. LSU doesn't have it. Clemson has tons of it. Clemson has more of it than any other team in the nation. I mean, other than probably Alabama. Dabo Swinney, he knows. Trevor Lawrence, he just won last year. A lot of the same players on Clemson are still from that championship team, including A.J. Terrell, who we talked about needs to have a big game. So I agree with that aspect of your part. The X factor could come down to that postseason experience because you don't really know what it is until you're truly there. And I think that it could be a little bit of a, I guess, you know, some early errors from LSU. They may think that because of the lack of experience there. But I really think this is LSU's year, man. With Coach O, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, everything has just gone right for this LSU team. Is this team's in the cards? Seems destined for this LSU team to win the championship this year, which makes it would be surprising to me if they don't win. And I know it sounds crazy because Clemson is the national championship from last year. Trevor Lawrence, a generational quarterback prospect. They have so much talent on both sides of the ball. But it just seems in the cards for LSU to win. And you know what's crazy is I had the same score, but flipped. I have an LSU 40, Clemson 37.
So we will see, man. And I'm with you. I think it definitely is LSU's year. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if they run away with this game just because of how well their offense has played this year. But I stuck with my prediction just because I can't backtrack on it or anything like that. So I have to stay with it. I'm going with Clemson. Jonah has taken LSU. But we would love to hear you guys' thoughts in the comments of the podcast. But once again, we want to thank you guys for listening to the Locked On College Football podcast. Of course, we will have a recap show up Tuesday afternoon, I should say, talking about everything that we learned from this game, some players that stuck out. And also, I'm going to go ahead and post after this show my interview with FIU quarterback James Morgan, who will be playing in the Shrine Bowl this weekend. Had a really good talk with him over the weekend and just his expectations of what he's expecting in this game. So without further ado, that interview will be attached to the end of this show. But once again, thank you guys for listening. And here's my interview with FIU quarterback James Morgan.
I want to go all the way back. Take me back. You're a Wisconsin guy. So take me back to your childhood. What was it like growing up in Wisconsin?
It was absolutely awesome. So my high school was a couple blocks away from Lambeau Field. My house was probably about 10 minutes, but still just growing up with that in like your backyard pretty much was phenomenal for me. Huge Brett Favre fan growing up. Absolutely loved watching him. Just had some magical moments there at Lambeau Field. One of them was they played the Seahawks and it was snowing and it was just a fantastic atmosphere for me. I really, you know, since a young age, that really caused me to fall in love with football. And ever since then, I really wanted to be a quarterback and just have absolutely loved the game.
You actually took my next question right from me. So I read that you were a huge Brett Favre fan. You wore the number 4 growing up, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
So just talk about some of the things you learned from Brett Favre and how you applied some of that stuff that you learned from him in your game today.
Well, I got to say with Brett Favre, you got to take some of the stuff, you know, some of the positives and some of the negatives. I guess you learn from both. So right. With the positives, you know, he just had the confidence every time he was on the field. There was no throw that he couldn't make, and he played like that, you know, and that's something that I feel like I can do the same thing. I feel like I make every throw out there, and that's the confidence I have to play with. Now, on the flip side of that, you look at some of those small windows where probably shouldn't have thrown it, but has the confidence in his arm strength to throw it, and you got to take away those as well as learning opportunities. Okay, maybe this is a tight window I can make this throw, but rather than doing that, what's the safer scenario for the play, and maybe that's a check down or something like that. So kind of take the good and the bad and learn from both, but definitely that gunslinger mentality where, you know, you don't back down from any throw on the field. You really feel you can make it, and that's something that I really emulate with my game too.
That's awesome, man. I'm a former college quarterback myself, so
okay.
There's some good stuff to take from Brett Favre, and I understand there's definitely some bad stuff to take from him as well, just because
he
has a cannon of an arm, and let's just be honest, we both probably never have combined the arm strength that he has.
Man, that guy could launch it, that's for sure.
He definitely could. So just staying on subject with your childhood, how did you get involved with the game of football, and did you play any other sports growing up?
So I got involved probably from I'd say probably like 4 years old. I mean, it's been my entire life. I can't think of a time where football wasn't a part of my life, and I've loved it since I was that old. I played, you know, flag football as you grow up and then got into Pop Warner and all that stuff. But I've played other sports, but it was always, those were secondary to football. I mean, even when I was in other seasons, it would always be, okay, after basketball practice, and I got throws with my dad in the gym. Right, because you don't have indoor football because Wisconsin is so cold, obviously, and all that stuff.
Right.
So yeah, it's been just an awesome experience for me, and you know, like I said, since I was about 4 years old, I've been playing. I've absolutely loved the game, and I've only played quarterback my entire career too. That's another thing about me is I know a lot of guys play different positions, but for me, it's been straight up quarterback since as early as I can remember.
That's really good stuff. So I'm just gonna be honest. I have no idea how to pronounce your high school. How do you pronounce it?
Most people don't. It's Ashwaubenon.
Ashwaubenon. So I probably wouldn't have been anywhere close to that. But at Ashwaubenon, you set a bunch of records. Just talk about or reflect back on your career.
When I think about it, I'm very grateful for the situation I was in terms of I went to a different middle school and ended up school choice, went to Ashwaubenon because they had a real good program, and really, really enjoyed my time there. I think it was something where, as a Wisconsin kid, you don't get recruited as heavily as states where football is a lot bigger, right?
Right.
So that was always kind of a chip on my shoulder, and I had something to prove every time I played that to these college coaches that I could do it. And that kind of sort of emulates my entire, you know, career pretty much, is I've always kind of felt like I've had to prove people wrong at every step, and I'm sure this process in some ways is going to be similar to that, but really, really enjoyed my time in Ashwaubenon in Green Bay, and it's awesome. You know, we had green and gold. The Packers had green and gold. It was great. Really liked it.
Pretty easy transition for you then. So I read that you also play basketball. I know you've already reflected on that a little bit already. So just talk about some of the things that you maybe not from just a football perspective, but from basketball, how that translated or helped you as a quarterback.
Sure. So that's an interesting question because I did play basketball. I wasn't quite as good as basketball, but the one that I think I really learned the most from was actually track.
Okay.
So I was a 4x4 state champion in 2015 in track, and I had the opening leg. I think I ran like a 49. Thankfully, the rest of the guys ran lower than I did. I think I had like a 48 and like 247, just really fast guys. But that was an awesome experience. And I think something about that was really cool was I was brand new to it, and all you could do is just go out. And the 400 is an absolutely grueling race. You got to pretty much sprint the entire length of the track, right? So for me, that was something that was a really good mental challenge. Like I had to really be, you know, mentally tough, mentally prepared to be able to just not quit the entire time, you know, going around that and just never giving up. And so that was something that I really liked about it, and just, you know, being able to do that. But winning that was awesome. I think that in terms of speed, that did some benefits for me in terms of maybe disproving a little bit that kind of the knock on me was I was always this pocket passer and I couldn't really run. Well, I just won state for the 4x4. And obviously there's a little different dynamics between that and the football field, but you know, it was something confidence-wise, I kind of knew I could do it, and I had people telling me that I can, and I was excited to be able to have that state championship trophy.
That's really good stuff, man, because what you hear about now is specialization is a big thing as far as kids growing up. Everybody wants to specialize in one sport, but kind of like our generation and older generations, you're playing basketball, you're playing football, you're playing soccer, so it's really good to see that you're playing in all of these different sports. But I want to get to the beginning of your college career now. So you signed with Bowling Green out of Ashwaubenon. So just what went into that decision and why Bowling Green?
The main factor was the offense and the coaching. Dino Babers was there. He has since gone to Syracuse. Sean Lewis was there. He's currently the head coach at Kent State. So just the relationship with those two and then the style of offense that they had. They had, Jimmy Garoppolo was in that system. Trying to think back, RG3 probably was as well. It was a Baylor style system. So being able to see kind of the way that the quarterback spread the field and just the caliber of the coaching that I was going to be able to really played into me committing there.
So you were in the air raid system, I'm guessing. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, so okay. It was interesting because that year it was air raid with Baylor. The following, when those guys left, it was Texas Tech. And so different systems, right, but still the same overall hierarchy of whatever air raid.
Okay. So I also read you got your pre-law degree from Bowling Green. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct.
So talk about that a little bit, man. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so that's something that once the football career winds down, hopefully a couple of long years here, that's something that I'd like to get into is law school. My aunt was a lawyer, and my grandpa who passed away was also a lawyer. And those were huge influences for me. Really looked up to them growing up, and it's just something that I really thought would be a cool thing to get into. So yeah, I took my major was called Rhetoric in the American Legal System. It was actually pretty cool. It was like a customized major I took at Bowling Green that me and my advisor sat down and formulated certain classes that we felt really fit a legal major and kind of had to get approved by the dean of the school. But was able to do that, and really enjoyed the academic side of things over there at BG, and liked it. So anyways, down the road, that's my plan.
That's good stuff, man. So you leave Bowling Green, you transfer to Florida International. What went behind that decision? Maybe not so why you transferred, but why did you choose FIU?
Sure. I think FIU had a lot of things that were really cool to offer. Probably the biggest one was the family atmosphere. When I went there, when I took my visits, you could tell how tight-knit everybody was. Excuse me. And they welcomed me in when I got there incredibly. I can't say how much support I had when I got there. So that was probably the biggest thing. The other factors included, like, the coaches. Obviously, Butch Davis, phenomenal coach. Really excited to learn under him. And having done it for the last 2 years, really blessed to be been a part of that. Also, Rich Skrosky, his offensive coordinator, had been in the business for 30-some years. So very experienced, good coaches and a family atmosphere, and I thought it was a great fit. Weather didn't hurt either, you know, being in Miami.
Right. I'm sure that was a pretty easy sell, being a Wisconsin guy.
Yes, sir.
Definitely. So your first year at FIU, I mean, you set the record books on fire. Y'all set a school record for wins, 9 wins. You set the record for single-season touchdown passes, and you finished second in passing yards with just over 2,750. So you're on top of the world right now. So just take me through your junior season and what that experience was about.
That's a good question. It was something where, you know, it kind of was just a big chip on my shoulder. I'm going to go back to that because coming from BG, obviously it didn't work out as I'd liked it to have there. Coming to FIU, I felt like every single day I had something to prove. I was in a quarterback battle with great kid Chris Alexander. I ended up going to Wagner this past year, but really good quarterback battle. I had to bring it every single day, and then the whole season, that's kind of my mentality, was I got a huge chip on my shoulder to have something to prove that I could play in the NFL, that I want to do this, and it was an awesome ride, man. It was great teammates that I had, formed a lot of memories, and really enjoyed that season. Happy that we were able to do the things that we did.
Really good stuff. Now, this past year, your numbers weren't as great, of course, but I thought you still played well for the most part. So, going into your fourth year and your final season at FIU, just talk about what you learned or your experiences and how you grew from your junior year to your senior year.
I think probably the biggest thing was the role that I had on the team as in my junior season. I was voted team captain, but when I got there at first, it was kind of a thing where I had to earn that respect before, you know, we ended up voting on it in the season. So I think kind of the shifting of the roles where 1 year, you know, you're competing for a job, you're trying to showcase what you can do to everybody, you're kind of getting in line, showing it can work, and then the next season it was kind of I ran the show. So that involved things like getting guys to 7-on-7 in the summer, setting up film studies, setting up workouts, all this stuff that was more of a leadership role. So that was a huge development for me in terms of my shifting role in the team and really taking in that leadership role and holding guys to that standard.
Really good stuff, man. So I have to ask you, the big win of the year, man, against Miami. What was that entire experience like? I know that was a big game for you, probably the biggest win in program history. So just take me through that experience from the game to the locker room atmosphere afterwards and just the great feedback you guys got after that game.
No, it was absolutely incredible. Just what it meant for the school was huge, and Coach Davis having came from there and being able to win that. So I can't say enough, honestly, about how well our guys played, how much energy they came out with. The atmosphere on the sideline and then after in the locker room, like you mentioned, was absolutely incredible. And I think probably the coolest thing about that game was we knew the entire season what we were capable of. Both talent-wise, work ethic-wise, and what we could do, and we could win every game is really what we thought. And that game really brought that to fruition on the field, which is a really cool thing. And obviously, like you mentioned, it wasn't the season that we wanted necessarily, but having everybody buy in still and not giving up when, you know, we weren't going to the Conference USA Championship and being able to bring it for that game was a really cool moment. And so thankful to be a part of that.
Definitely. That definitely, I would say, is the biggest win in program history. It was a really great game to watch unfold as well. So let's dive deeper into your playing style uniquely a little bit, though. So let's talk about first, what would you say your biggest strength is that you bring to the table as a quarterback?
My biggest strength that I bring to the table is a couple things. I think in terms of, you can talk about ability. I have great arm strength, and I really think that my accuracy and anticipation in terms of seeing windows and putting it on guys right when I want to, with my arm strength, where it needs to be away from defenders, is probably the biggest thing ability-wise that I bring to the table. I'd say those things, arm strength, anticipation, accuracy, are what I bring. But I'm almost like in a bigger sense, I'm the hardest working guy, you know, you're going to meet. Like, you can ask any of my teammates, I work my tail off, and I love doing it. That's why I do it, is because I absolutely love football, and I love the feeling of getting out to game day and knowing that I have the tools because I've studied and because I worked at it to be able to go out and shred the defense. So, you know, you're going to get a guy in the field who can make throws, who has a huge arm, but then who is going to be just the hardest worker and just loves to prepare and get every single detail down come game day.
Really good stuff, man. I always like asking guys what they bring to the table just because, you know, some guys, they like their accuracy. They feel like they could bring arm strength to the table, and sometimes it's just their football IQ. So you just tying all that together, that's really good stuff. Now I want to ask you, on the flip side of things, what would you say are a couple things you think you need to work on?
Yeah, well, one of the biggest things that comes to mind right away is mobility. You know, I already mentioned kind of that my knock has been a pocket passer, so certainly something that I want to show teams in this pre-draft process is that I can move, and then I'm able to get away from defenders, stay on balance, be able to make a lot of different throws. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I'm working on right now, is just being quick with that, moving in the pocket, being able to stay on good platform and deliver throws. Probably one of the bigger things that I'm working on right now.
That definitely is a huge thing, especially with improvisation. You see guys like Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray and all these guys coming into the league, even Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold.
Right.
All these young guys coming into the league, you have to be able to improvise. Just because the NFL game, man, these defensive linemen, they're so athletic. You have to be able to, when the pocket breaks down, you have to be able to create off script in a sense.
Right.
So really good hearing you say that. But the last question, I'll let you get out of here. The East-West Shrine Bowl, I have to ask you about that. Being selected to that game, you're already down there in your home state. Well, I shouldn't say your home state, but the state you attended college in. So being down there, playing in front of your home state fans, just talk about that experience and what you're trying to show to these scouts and evaluators that week down there in practices and also in the game.
It's a great opportunity for me. I get to showcase myself against some great competition. One of the things coming from FIU is it's a group of five school. It's not a Power Five competition, and so basically I get to showcase what I can do against the better competition at this game and kind of alleviate some of those rumors, whatever. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm hoping to display some, you know, like I said, my arm strength, being able to anticipate throws and being accurate with it, showing that I got an NFL skill set. I think it's a great opportunity for me. Very thankful to be involved in that, and can't wait to get down there and compete.
Well, I just want to wish you good luck, man, and I know you're going to crush it down there. I'm really excited to watch this thing unfold, and I just want to wish you luck once again, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Awesome. Hey, thank you for having me.
No problem.